Tom Panos, John McGrath, Troy Malcolm, welcome to that time of the week where it's called Million Dollar Agent.
Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Troy.
Tom, that was loud.
You know what I just thought of, guys? If we keep doing this podcast, and let's assume it's 2031, right? And let's assume, I just thought of this, and let's assume that...
Nearly 15 years, right?
So, yeah.
12, 13 years, yep.
And CPI has gone up, and $1 million is not buying you much. What do we need to make a decision? Do we change the brand name? Do we have
a billion dollar agent?
Billion dollar agent. Do we have a strategy for 2030 at the moment? Are we sort of just moving away, going with the flow? Have we thought about the consequences of being stuck with million dollar agent in a world where there's inflation?
I'm trying to figure out what we're about to talk about for the next 15 minutes, let alone 15 years. Let's cross that bridge when we come to it, Tommy, and... When million dollar agent no longer becomes relevant. No, but you're right. I was talking to someone the other day and I was saying that, you know, once upon a time, if you hit a million, you're in the top 10 agents in Australia. Now you've probably got to hit four or five.
Yeah.
Which is kind of good because it just means that the industry is getting smarter at what they do. And, you know, there's been a few interesting trends in the last few years. Teams.
Teams
are
huge.
Not just a few years, probably, you know, five, six years.
Yeah.
Teams is huge. Social media marketing. A lot of people now, Troy, we know Alex Mintorn on the North is getting some great results through social media brand marketing, personal brand. And we talk about this a bit. We're just chatting offline before that, you know, with everyone, there's generally two brands. There's the brand they work for and their own brand.
Mm.
And I think people have got to understand there is a distinction. And the ideal outcome is for you to work for a great brand or a brand that's got a good in the community. A good credibility, but also develop a great personal brand. You know, so it's the Tom Panos brand within the XYZ real estate brand, and that's really the ideal outcome.
So Johnny and Troy, we're going to actually talk about another topic today, and we're going to talk about work-life segmenters and work-life integrators, because we do know that some of the most successful real estate agents seem to work more than a 35, 38-hour week and how they organise all of that. But I do want to go on and say McGrath's was probably... the first big business that had moved away from a model decades ago where it was just about the office. You've always been one where you've encouraged individuals to actually build an audience themselves, be an audience developer. But in this world that we live in now where individuals are using social media, individuals are having their own, and you were probably the first business to have agents that actually had mini business units. Today,
yeah,
it's quite common.
Yeah, I mean, off one of the early ARICs, one of the talks was from Bob Boland, was about effective business units. And in those days, agent was an agent, and the office had a secretary, or PA. And then all of a sudden, the smarter agents and the more progressive agents thought, well, hang on, if I employed someone, maybe that helps me go from 30 sales to 50 or 60. And that worked. And so I think you're right. And I think everyone listening to this has got to see themselves as self-employed, irrespective of their structure. And they also have to see themselves as a brand, even if their name's not above the door, because their name's on their business card. And there's a great quote I heard the other day, Troy, and it was, everything we do is autobiographical.
Mm.
So it's like every action you take, every conversation you have, the way you treat everyone is a fingerprint about who you are. So I think... thinking about, well, I work for McGrath, or I work for, you know, LJ Hooker, Ray White, or any number of brands, is part of the equation. But as Belfort said, you know, Jordan Belfort at ARIC a few years ago, he said, you know, you've got to sell yourself, you've got to sell your company, you've got to sell your service. And I think that's still very relevant. So, very, very interesting times. But I'm interested in today's topic because I think it's, for a lot of people, when I'm coaching, Tom, and I'm sure you and Troy are the same, it's not just about more money. Because many good agents, most good agents have got enough.
Mm.
Like they're living comfortably, and sure, some people's sort of, you know, cost of living is more than others, but I think it's really about, you know, what are you seeking to achieve? And for a lot of people, it's balance and freedom and time with family or whatever. So finding that right, because some people, I think, actually go the other way too far. There are some people in this industry, and this is a competitive industry, Troy, as you know, that... kind of take their foot off the pedal to a degree and they say, oh, I want the work-life balance, and all of a sudden they go from, you know, writing 500 GCI to 200 and they think, oops, I need to kind of get back on the treadmill. So I think you can work too little and work too much, and so we should talk about it. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, the reason I'd like to talk about this is last Sunday at Broadway Shopping Centre, I ran into someone that's in real estate. We'll keep him anonymous. And he was on the phone talking to a client, and I said, "You're working today?" And he said to me, not that my family loves it, but he said, "Tom, I'm always on when it's on." Mm-hmm. And I said...
Meaning if there's a deal to be done, yeah, I'm available, right?
Yeah. Yep. And then we went on to
we
say...
We know for a start it's not Tringali.
No, so as a matter of fact...
You got to switch him on.
Sorry, Michael, you get a few raps on it, but today we know that, you know, there are certain days that you're doing salami and there's certain days that you're not doing salami. So it wasn't Tringali. But this guy said to me, John and Troy, he said, "I used to feel guilty about it, but I no longer do because I've accepted my style of work blends the two. I don't like to have a line that separates the two." And it got me thinking, mm-hmm, that there's guys and girls in our real estate industry that we've met over the last 2-3 decades that seem to work either way. There's a group of people that actually have learned how to blend things. They don't mind working from home. They make calls at times that people don't think of business hours. But there's another group of people that say, "Hey, the minute I get home, I want to have a shower, I want to take my clothes off, I want to turn my mobile off, I'm off." So I think it's worth exploring our views,
yep,
what you've seen from real estate agents in your company and successful agents from other companies over the years, and just unpack and dig deep on this subject. And firstly, I'd also like to ask, JM, where do you think you're a work-life integrator or a work-life segmenter where you separate the two?
Predominantly segmenter. I like to kind of turn the phone off, and so then I don't have to think, worry, stress, be distracted by a certain time of day. Having said that, I'll often work at a cafe on a Sunday morning for 2 or 3 hours because that's kind of work in inverted commas I don't see as work.
Mm.
If I'm planning a training session, if I'm thinking about podcast stuff, if I'm thinking of looking at a marketing, creative marketing scenario, I actually find that very pleasurable. And I think this is one of the problems. First off, I'd say a great subject, and I think there is no answer. You have to find the answer that works for you. Mm. And for some people, I know people that are very high performers and they go on a boat, they might have a boat, and they're sitting there swimming and then they get back on and then they take a call and whatever. For me, I wouldn't do that. I want to know if I'm on holidays,
yeah,
or if it's the weekend and I'm not working that weekend, I kind of want to get into that space. But other people say, "Well, I couldn't be on the boat unless I was accessible, and I'm happy to take calls, and I'm doing 2 or 3 deals a day off the boat." So everyone's different. So
can I ask Troy? Ask you? Where do you think?
I'm an integrator. Monday to Saturday, I will just keep going. I don't like to stop because I think a big telling sign for me is energy. If my energy's on, I'm going to try and keep doing the work. It's just the way I've always been. But then I religiously on a Sunday, I don't talk to anyone. I've got 2 dogs. You go to the park. I go up and see my parents. I try to stay away from work. But definitely Monday to Saturday, at any time, most times, you can get me.
Okay. So, Johnny, as a director of a business that's raised so many multi-million dollar agents, have a quick glance in your head. Work-life integrators or work-life segmenters? I mean, they all worked hard, I'm sure.
I think most of them would be considered very hard workers, but then they separate their family life.
Mm.
I mean, you know, the people that come to mind, I'm thinking Matt Steinwade, I'm thinking, you know, Adrian Bridges, Michael Coombs, Peter Chauncey, a whole range of people that are all very family-orientated. So they all have families, they all have relationships that are great, and they love putting attention and time into those, which it should be.
Big shout out to Coombs as well. Tommy yesterday is expecting a baby.
Yeah, with
if
me.
If it's not public, yeah, it's public now. But I'm sure you'll be told.
So I think that looking at most of them, now this is not a 9-to-5 industry.
Mm.
I think anyone that thinks they're going to be a top writer and in hot demand by clients and get in the office at 9 and clock off at 5 is deluding themselves. So, you know, now whether you're working 8 till 6 or 7 till 7 or 6 days or whatever, but I think generally speaking, I say to people getting into the industry, I would expect to work from 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. 6 days a week. That's what I think is a kind of fair and balanced view. Do I think you have to work till 9 o'clock at night? No. I'm not a good night person. I'm not a good person at night. I kind of like to clock off and have dinner with friends, or I don't really want to be in the office at 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. But I'm happy to, I start work at 6:45 in the morning. So I'm an early person, and most of my meetings, my first ones start at 7 a.m. So I kind of...
That's 60 hours. I've just done a calculation. 8 to 6, 6 days a week is a 60-hour week.
And I think that's probably realistic. Now, the benefit is there is inbuilt within that time flexibility. Like a lot of people, when you pick up your kids, you can duck off to the gym, you can, you know, if you need to go into the city or an appointment or to do some shopping or whatever. I mean, this is an industry, unlike many others, where you do get flexibility because it's mobile. You're in the community and you're out and you're running around and you can, you know, you can do all sorts of things whilst on the phone doing deals safely. So I think that you've got to see that it is that, but at some point, and I've seen marriages and lives destroyed over agents that couldn't hit off on the phone, male and female, that just, you know, they got caught in the deal. Now, this is one of the problems and one of the benefits. Because this is such an exciting industry and because we're doing deals is really quite intoxicating and fun and rewarding if you're doing enough of them, I think it is easy to not have boundaries or borders. And so I would encourage people, and it's got to be, you know, if you're in a relationship, you know, it's got to have a discussion with your partner as to what works. I think there might be, now I think there's less demand nowadays, Tom, than when you and I were kind of in the thick of it years ago of having to see people after hours, because I think people like their own privacy as well. Mm-hmm. And people are now doing more work from home and they're more remote and more flexible work hours. So there was a time when if you ever wanted to get a husband and wife together to talk about the sale of their property, it had to be at 7 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. When they were both at home, you know, baby was being bathed, kids had had dinner, and then you met with them. And I remember, you know, many, many nights, most nights, I was out in lounge rooms doing listing appointments. I think that's less of an issue now because I think a lot of people now can get the flexibility to meet the agents that they're considering during the day. I would encourage people to put some boundaries around it because if you're genuinely a 24/7, that's unlikely to work for someone else in your life. Because if you're sitting there on a Sunday morning having a croissant or at a local cafe and trying to have a conversation, the phone's ringing every 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's too much.
It's kind of, it's got to be damaging, I think.
Yeah.
So that'd be my first thing. The other thing, though, Tom, is often we've seen in this industry, Troy, a lot of husband and wife or just, you know, couples in relationships has worked quite successfully. So that's another interesting avenue to look at. And it either works or it doesn't. I've seen, again, marriage is almost ruined because of it, but I've seen other people who have had phenomenal flourishing businesses and life relationships that have been in partnership in business.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's a great topic to talk about, but it's going to be what works for you, what works for your family, what works for your partner to find that. But bottom line is I think this is a 60-hour a week job.
Yeah.
And I think within those 60, there's some flexibility as to what you do, and if you pick up here and there, that's fine.
There's a guy called Chris Hassel who's speaking at ARIC. Actually, I'm seeing him on Friday for a session. He writes, he's about 30, writes over a couple of million in Bentley.
Yeah, Bentley, Victoria.
Bentley, Victoria, outstanding operator. And he said to me that for years... one of the rituals that allow him to be a work-life integrator is the gym happens between 12 and 2.
Yep.
And that gives him a new lease and his other team members a new lease of energy because exercise does seem to have some chemical effect after you've done it.
And a mental break, Tom. I mean, if you're working from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., just say, or 8 till 6, whatever it is, and all day you're on the phone and all day you're doing deals, it can become claustrophobic in your mind. So having a physical break, whether that's a walk around the block or an hour at the gym, I think is quite healthy as well.
Mm. From my experience, one of the things that I suppose we're saying is there is no right way, there's your way. And in many ways, be the subject and the scientist. See what works for you. See when you're in the zone. Because there's a group of people that might find that they're in the zone at a specific hour that is an unorthodox time and you want to capitalise on that. But for me, having rituals and routines in your week, I think even if you're someone that blends in work, rituals and routines in many ways are boundaries, right?
Yeah.
And one of the rituals that I've learned from trial and error is if I'm reading emails an hour before I go to sleep, I seem to dream about the contents.
Interrupts your sleep, right?
It's true. You seem to wake up in the morning and you don't have had a deep sleep, and it appears that the last things that you go to sleep on, your body seems to be focused on, I think that maybe one of the things that in a world that you're pretty much always available because of mobile phones, mm-hmm. I suppose one of the things that I want to say to our listeners is if you are struggling to sleep, have a look at what you're doing 1 or 2 hours before you do go to sleep. Are you looking at emails from buyers, sellers, from your PAs or your CSMs?
Well, Arianna Huffington that wrote the book called, I've forgotten, anyway, great book. I think it is Thrive or something it's called.
Yeah.
And she dedicates a large chunk of that book to good quality sleep. And she said people underestimate how important it is. And it's a science. It's a project. You don't just kind of like throw your head on the pillow. For a lot of people, they don't sleep well. So they wake up, you know, and it affects their health and their well-being and their relationships. So, yeah, I think it is a really good topic.
Joni, as you brought her name up, I just showed Troy. I had it down in my notes because what inspired this podcast was listening to her when she was only 5 years of age. She recalls sending kids home that came to her birthday party after an hour because it was interrupting with her reading.
Really?
Yes, and she talks about that she was an obsessed workaholic, and then eventually she broke down and was mentally drained, and I think that sparked her off. And she's obsessed about people getting the right amount of sleep.
Well, she's got two books, so Thrive and then The Sleep Revolution.
That's the next one. But even Thrive, the first one, talked a lot about sleep patterns.
Yeah.
So look, it's funny that the labels though, Tom, as you said, you know, obsessed workaholic. When people have often said to me, you know, are you a control freak? Are you an obsessed workaholic? I say, look, no, I think to a degree I'm a perfectionist. I like things done well, and I think I have a view on things, but to me I don't label myself a control freak. Others may. And the same here, obsessive workaholic. I have always loved what I do.
Mm.
So I've never thought, shit, I've got to get up and go to work. Oh, God, another work day, you know. I loved and still do the stuff that I do. So if I work 10 or 12 hours a day doing stuff I love that I'm fascinated in, that's intellectually stimulating and socially stimulating, versus someone that works 8 hours doing stuff they hate and can't wait to retire, I look at that and I think, well, who's kind of in the right or the wrong? Mm. Again, as long as it doesn't interfere with other parts of your life that are important, hobbies, relationships, friends, family, I think it's kind of not a bad thing.
Well, I think one of the things that's coming out of this is that either way can work, but what you're saying, Johnny, is that if you find meaning in your work, if you enjoy your work, if you find that work is an expression of who you are, you're probably not one of these people that's always looking, oh, I need a recovery session to get over something, because when you really like what you're doing, I mean, like going to the movies, you don't need a recovery session after you've gone to the movie because you love what you're doing.
Well, Dr. Fred talked a long time ago. He got a great metaphor that I'll repeat. And for those that are coming to ARIC, we're going to do a Q&A. One of us will Q&A Dr. Fred, which I think will be, for me anyway, a highlight because he's changed my life probably more than any other person on planet Earth. And he talked about, because he was a salmon fisherman, he loved fishing. And he said, John, you know, on the weekend, if I'm going up the mountains in New Zealand off the back of Christchurch with some friends fishing, and you know, we want to get up there early to get the start of the day, and maybe the fish are moving around a bit more at that time, whatever reason, he liked to get an early start, and they used to leave his place at 4 a.m. And he said, you know, I never had to set the alarm for 4 a.m. when I was fishing because I couldn't wait to get there. Mm. And he said, you know, if you love what you're doing, that's how it should feel, is I can't wait to get there.
Mm.
And I thought that was great. And it is how I've felt the vast majority of my life about what I do. But it puts it in perspective, and you're right. You know, if you've got exciting something on tomorrow morning, chances are you'll probably set your alarm but not need it. So I think it's about, you know, making sure you're passionate about what you do, and if you're not, working out what are the bits you're stuck at. I had a whole series of coaching sessions this morning. I won't go into them in great detail, but it's interesting in how in 45 minutes,
in the right environment, you can help people get unstuck fairly quickly. And, you know, you talked about being the scientist and the project, and sometimes I talk about, you know, being the doctor and the operation is. It's very hard to operate on yourself, as Dr. Fred told me many years ago. You know, you need a third-party perspective. But, you know, we broke through some great barriers, people that were already doing well, but I think off the back of our sessions today will do very well, just by working out where are they stuck. And that comes out of conversation.
John, you know what I'd love to do? Next podcast, if you can keep some of your notes, can we talk about getting unstuck and some of the main things that came up, you know, out of those coaching conversations that you had?
Love to.
We go over that next week.
That'll be good.
Okay. Perfect. So next week, getting unstuck.
Cool. And also next week, we're going to have to draw out the winner of the ARIC competition.
Okay, which means we get another chance to tell people, get on to iTunes or the Google Store and put in your reviews. Tell us how good Million Dollar Agent Podcast is, how it's transformed your life. Maybe not as good as how John's 45-minute session transformed his coaching students, but you know what? Guess what? Winner, best winner, will get a ticket to ARIC 2018. I want to thank our sponsors, realestate.com.au, and I've got to tell you, Shane Beaumont during the week from Rewa, number one agent for Rate My Agent, number two for Rewa, said to me he uses a realestate.com report for vendor management. He says he can't work out why more people don't print off the realestate.com reports that show exactly the activity that's going on that property. He actually has that, sits down with the vendor. So when the vendors say, but we haven't had that many buyers through, he says, maybe not in the property, but let's have a look at the amount of interest that's been happening. So don't forget, realestate.com. Thank you again, our sponsors. Use their tools. We'll like to see you all next week. Have a great week. Guys, good to see you again.
See you, everyone.
Bye.